This is the Outsource Accelerator Podcast, exploring business and outsourcing mastery. Let's do it. Welcome to another episode of the Outsource Accelerator Podcast. My name is Derek Gallimore, and this is episode number 125. So today I'm joined again by Neville Samuels. He is the founder and owner of Virtual Staff 365. We've actually spoken to Neville before in episode 119, where we explore the origins of this man, his business and outsourcing experience. Then in episode 122, we discuss his company, the Virtual Staff 365, and the value he provides for his clients. And then today we talk more broadly about outsourcing, the future of outsourcing, different outsourcing destinations, different outsourcing options. So there's a lot of value in this episode for you, especially if you're looking for a blended outsourcing destination approach. If you want any of the show notes or any more information on this episode, then go to outsourceaccelerator.com/125. Enjoy. Welcome back, everybody. Today I am joined by Neville Samuels again of Virtual Staff 365. Hi, Neville. How are you doing?
Hi, Derek. Hi, listeners. Great to be here.
Thanks for coming. And I'm really excited to talk to you again. You're an oracle of knowledge, both in terms of general business, but also outsourcing. And of course, you run and own Virtual Staff 365, which specializes in the management and placement of VAs, which are virtual assistants. So I suppose initially we have spent time talking on two podcasts prior. So if you want to go back and hear Neville's backstory, then please do so. But Neville, do you just want to introduce yourself first?
Sure. I'm the founder of Virtual Staff 365. We help small and medium-sized businesses get their time back by recruiting, employing, and retaining great virtual staff. And we have some other clients that don't have a need for virtual staff, but they have a need for something a little bit more, let's say, corporate or a little bit larger. And that's where we try and help them in the BPO space.
Fantastic. So you have an accounting background, and you've had at least a couple of businesses before. You started your outsourcing journey in 2009, and, you know, 2011 you came to the Philippines, virtually, I suppose, and started on your Philippine outsourcing journey. And, you know, how long ago did you start Virtual Staff 365?
I started Virtual Staff 365 in April 2016.
Right, okay. And so there is that common progression we see with a lot of entrepreneurs and business people, you know, that have a lot of ideas and are excited to start things, that people can start their outsourcing journey by scratching their own itch and get super excited, hiring a lot of people because they see the opportunities there, and then quite commonly moving into the outsourcing service provision space in some capacity or another. So it's good to have another comrade in that regard, Neville.
Yes. And I started with VAs in one of my own businesses in e-commerce. And essentially, I got out of this business at the end of 2015 after the Australian dollar dropped and various things happened in the e-commerce space that led me to get out of that business. And I was talking to my business partner, and he said, "What are you going to do?" And I said, "You know, if I talk to my network here in Melbourne and I said to them, who do you go to do outsourcing? They don't have anyone. They don't have anyone to speak to. They wouldn't know where to go. They'd probably go into Google." And I picked up on that opportunity and thought, well, given I've been working with teams in the Philippines and in India and VAs, I can show people what I know, and that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, and it's super, super valuable, isn't it? Because it's just people need stepping stones to outsourcing, I think. At the current situation, the way it is that, you know, people have to rely on Google, then they're making phone calls to the Philippines, which is, in their mind, you know, a foreign scary country. They're talking to foreign scary people, and there's such a huge knowledge gap because they don't quite know what's behind the website or behind the person on the phone call, whether there's like a, you know, sweatshop environment. People like yourself sitting in Melbourne, it really, really adds a huge amount of validation to the whole outsourcing thing, doesn't it? And it gives people a lot of confidence to take that next step.
Yeah, it does. And it makes a big difference for businesses that are apprehensive to know that there's someone local that'll understand them. And that's really the difference. I know a lot of people pick up the phone. They'll get through to someone in the Philippines. They won't know who. And that person's role is to put bums on seats. And they won't necessarily be able to work out if the job or the task or the role of this VA is really suitable. Mm. And I find from time to time, probably at least once a week, I'll tell someone that they're not ready for a VA, or they don't have the processes in place, or they don't have the time available for their VA. I see that as very much part of my role being here in Melbourne, but it's also good for the industry, because if we can ensure that 99 times out of 100 clients are successful, people are successful, it'll be good for the whole industry.
Yeah, it's a win-win for everyone, isn't it? Because then obviously their home company flourishes and you know, is more successful, but then also they hire more outsourcing staff. It really is a win-win, isn't it? And because these people start off a little bit anxious, it is so important that their initial engagement and experiences are positive, because if people get a bit of a bad experience, then I think they can so easily just can the whole experience, you know.
Well, that's right. And if we can ensure success, they'll come back for more. But if it doesn't work with the first one, they'll forever be tainted with a bad taste in their mouth and say, I tried it, it didn't work for me, without actually looking introspectively and saying, well, maybe I wasn't actually ready. So it's really important, and I think we discussed this in the previous chat we had, really important to find the right candidates. The longest it's taken me to find a suitable candidate is 5 months.
Wow.
And that was actually for a recruiter. And the recruiter was very specific. And every time I spoke to her, I said, I'm not sure that I'm going to be able to find someone for you. And she kept on plugging away. And we found the right person. And about a week after she started, she sent me a message. She said, it was worth the wait.
Wow. Because it's always a bit potluck anyway, isn't it? You know, like HR and hiring and employing is still, you know, regardless of where you are or what you're doing, it is still a bit potluck, isn't it?
Correct. You can make a mistake. You can make a huge mistake with someone sitting right in front of you.
Yeah.
And you can employ them, and there can be all sorts of problems. So the interesting thing in this case was the client was applying her Australian recruiting principles to a VA on about $9.50 an hour.
Right.
What
would the Australian equivalent cost for that kind of role?
Well, it would be in the recruiting industry. I think she'd be on about 60,000.
Right.
A year.
So about $20. Plus you'd have all of the employment overheads there, wouldn't you, as well? So
well, 60,000 is more like $30 an hour plus on costs. So, yeah. Plus you'd have to provide them with a desk and a chair. And when you're a recruiter working in a co-working space, that's an extra $600-$700 or $800 if you're in the city.
Yeah, so it's maybe you're talking about $40 compared to $9.50, which is 75% savings. Not bad, That's not bad. So let's talk about the evolution of outsourcing. You know, your first introduction was 2009, which incidentally was the first time I started using a Indian bookkeeper. And then similarly, I moved over to the Philippines with my staffing in 2011 as well, so the same year. But can you tell me, you know, through your observations and experience, how has outsourcing changed in that time?
Well, I think if we just think about it as a consumer, back in about, I don't know what time was, maybe 2005, 2006, once the internet really kicked off, we were all getting phone calls from call centers in India. And that for me was the start of outsourcing just as a consumer. Right. And I went to India to get myself a customer service agent in 2009, and he was absolutely fantastic. He was just amazing, and I loved the experience. The problem I had wasn't with him, as I was saying earlier. The problem I had was with the agency that provided him and provided the services, in that they weren't 100% honest about how the relationship was working. Mm. Now, that's just one particular experience. I know lots of people that are having great experiences in India, but it's not in customer service. So what happened with us was we had this experience, and all that really happened was we gave him an increase. He never received it. And I said, why haven't you thanked me? It was something as simple as saying to someone, you haven't acknowledged the increase I gave you. Mm. And that's all a thank you does. A thank you actually says, I got it. And he didn't do that. And when I questioned him, he said, all bonuses and increases for the first 2 years go to the agency. They don't come to me.
Yeah, which shows, you know, it just shows the sort of lack of sophistication of the agency, doesn't it? You know, they're kind of after short-term gain as opposed to building strong relationships. Do you see that as a representation of the industry and now, what is it, nine years later, things have...
I could never say that because I only had one experience with one company. But what that did was it said to us, the next time we're going to take on someone else, we're going to go to the Philippines, because we were starting to hear things about the Philippines. So we moved across to the Philippines, and that's where things really took off for us. And we ended up with tens of guys working for us in the Philippines. That really helped us scale our business. The evolution for us, I believe, is indicative of the industry. I think customer service is now being done in the Philippines. I think the Philippines, the evolution is that the Philippines has become the go-to location for customer service and repetitive work. Mm. Now, repetitive work doesn't necessarily mean boring, but you could have a lot of graphic design. You could have web development being done in the Philippines, but I see a lot of customer service and a lot of call center work happening in the Philippines, a lot of voice and telephony, because they're pretty good at English. Right. And I say pretty because the comparison is the experience I had from about 2005 with these call centers coming through from India, which did the whole industry a disservice, but it actually really helped the Philippines. What I'm seeing now is I'm seeing India is still the go-to place for software development.
Right. They are far more kind of tech oriented, aren't they? And kind of geared up to development jobs and things like that. But again, it's just super important that I think that you find the ones with sufficient infrastructure and competency within project management. Otherwise, it can end up being a bit blind leading the blind, can't it? I find with...
Yes, and you do hear about horror stories, but I think those horror stories, I think that can happen anywhere. Generally, what I'm seeing when we talk about the evolution, if you say to me, where do I go for software development? Possibly that's India or even Ukraine, Eastern Europe states, the ex-Soviet bloc states. They're very big in software development. Ukraine, Belarus, Hungary. I'm seeing a lot of that.
But also it's amazing how this is evolving now, isn't it? Because we spoke previously about, you know, if you're sitting in Sydney or Melbourne, and previously your employment opportunities were within that town and within the borders, and even within 2 kilometer radius of your office in that town, because everyone had to truck into the office. Whereas now, when you expand your horizons and you look to the world, there's really a smorgasbord out there, isn't it? And as you say, like, people go to Eastern Europe now for developers, people go to India for kind of web management and CS, customer support, and Philippines is very much about voice and personality and customer support. And, you know, immediately you're going from kind of a catchment of maybe 500,000 people up to maybe a catchment of about 500,000,000 people.
That's right. And what I'm starting to see in my small little pocket of work is we're starting to see work shift as well to South Africa. Mm. And that for me is really exciting, firstly because I come from South Africa, but I've never really worked there other than doing my articles with Price Waterhouse, which finished in 93, and I came to Australia in 94. I don't really have a working career in South Africa, but what I'm actually seeing happen in South Africa is because English is a first language, and because the education system is very similar to Australia in terms of it being part of the British Commonwealth, starting to see a lot of work that we're doing, we're starting to shift over to South Africa because the quality of the work coming out of South Africa can be so much better. Now, there are certain call centers operating in South Africa like iSelect, IONET, Foxtel. That's customer service call center work. And it certainly would be more expensive than in the Philippines. But what I'm also starting to see, and I think we're going to see a big shift in the next 5 years, is digital marketing. Because it's work. Now, South Africa is 8 hours behind. During daylight saving, it's 9 hours behind. So to run a small call center in South Africa for Australia is really, really hard. We've got practical experience with that. It's been very difficult for us. But we've been doing it, mixed success, because the guys have to come to work at 1 a.m. in the morning. It's easier. In fact, if we just go back to the Philippines, when they work for the USA, which is the biggest employer of people in the outsourcing industry in Manila, they start work at about 10, 11 p.m. at night. It's much easier to go to work at 10 or 11 p.m. at night than to have to be at work at 1 a.m. in the morning.
And it's so ingrained in the culture now, isn't it? I think people come over here and they're just amazed at, you can go to Eastwood in Manila and the place is literally alive at 4 a.m. in the morning just because most of the people are halfway through their shift. And it's such a culture of kind of a 24/7 shift cover mentality. And a lot of that, as you say, is because the initial outsourcing sort of nascent beginning was with the US, which is just crazy times, isn't it? And but there's now an entire industry, an entire sector just built on the normalcy of people working around the clock. And I think also when I first actually came over to the Philippines, I did that because I needed a 24/7 cover. And that's just unheard of, because I worked in the hotel hospitality sector, and that is just unheard of in the UK, that you could really have a team working around the clock. Whereas it is so much more normalized and obviously so much then more affordable when you come to places such as the Philippines, where it is just, you know, as common, if not more common, than a normal 9-to-5.
Well, I think it's considered to be quite a sought after career these days in the Philippines to be working in a BPO.
Yeah, absolutely. And even call center, you know, because you don't get any call center professionals in the UK. They are pretty much transitional students doing it until whatever, they get a real job in inverted commas, where you actually get people dedicated to the call center profession here. So you get a far higher professionalism and people take it far more seriously.
Yes. So, Derek, what we're actually now seeing is roles that can be done, or work that can be done outside of traditional working hours. I'm seeing that going to places like South Africa, and I think we're going to see the trend is going to be even more so. So I'll tell you a few things about South Africa. They've got a very good education system, very high unemployment. The South African rand is at around 10, somewhere between 10 and 11 rands to $1. Mm. When I came to Australia, I got $1 for 2 rand 70, and it's now for 10 rand 50. So the cost of wages in relative terms is coming down. It's not at the same low level as the Philippines, but it's still attractive. So you can get people to do things like blog writing, PPC, SEO, digital marketing, social media. All of that can be done in South Africa for roughly 30 to 50% of what it's costing people in Australia. And it can be done with your eyes closed, because you can find staff, you can find guys, freelancers that are really, really good at what they do. They don't need instructions. Whereas my experience with the Philippines is it's hard to find those resources.
Yeah, and things are slightly more process orientated here than, follow a standard operating procedure and kind of map out the stages. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? So do you see quite a bright future in outsourcing in South Africa then?
Well, I see a bright future for outsourcing everywhere, because I think as the world gets smaller, there are just new opportunities spring up in new places. So, you know, in terms of my business, I'm essentially country agnostic. It's more about where I can find good quality candidates and resources for my clients. So if a client comes to me and says to me, Neville, we want to do something, and I don't think I can give my client a good result in the Philippines, and I think I can get them a better result in South Africa, and I've got the ability to source the resources there, I'll do that. Mm. I've recently just had a conversation with a business in South Africa that's got excess capacity in terms of office space, and they're saying to me, Neville, we'll be your BPO. We'll build this for you. We've got the resources.
Yeah.
You know, so that might be where things go. I don't really know, but I think what's going to happen is over time, a business can be based anywhere and it can be run by anyone as long as there's direction. So if there's someone in Melbourne that wants to start a business and it doesn't have to be physical, or the physicality of it is a small component, you can have people doing your work for you everywhere, whether it's in the US or the UK or it's in Russia or it's in the Philippines. It doesn't really matter where they are. I think over time we are going to see these various regions are going to become far more highly specialized than what they are today.
I agree. It's kind of a network effect, isn't it? Like, you know, you go to Silicon Valley and you get programmers. You probably wouldn't get very good, customer support in Silicon Valley. So you kind of pick and choose your areas for their specialisms, don't you? And it's become more of that smorgasbord, as you say. And so it's people such as yourself that's important to connect the dots and curate an outcome for people that aren't as orientated as you.
I'll take a little bit further. If someone, generally people don't come to me for innovation. They come to me to find them people to save them time, to get their work done, or to get the things done that they just can't get to at the moment, or to give their team additional resources to get their work done.
Mm.
But if someone came to me and said to me, Neville, we want innovation. We can't find the right people here. Where can we go for innovation? It's quite simple. You'd go to Israel.
Mm.
It's the number one innovation country in the world, hands down.
Yeah, I agree.
But it doesn't mean that the coding and the software that comes out of Israel is actually written in Israel. They outsource it to Eastern Europe.
Right.
Why should they waste their time doing coding when they can do more highly valuable or provide greater input into the software that's being written? They get the actual code done elsewhere. And this is a generalization.
And
my understanding is that a lot of code for the Israeli startup industry is done in Eastern Europe. But if you want to know where Google and Apple and Intel are getting their innovation from, they've outsourced it to Israel. So there are different pockets around the world that will become known for different specialties in outsourcing.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? And it's only just beginning, really, isn't it? People, I think, are finding their specialisms now. They're finding, you know, their strengths, and then it's because of the local network effect, it's really building on those strengths. And as you say, I think it will become quite siloed, won't it? And places will become known for specialization. Where do you see, I suppose, then the future of outsourcing? There's a bit of concern in the Philippines at the moment that things like artificial intelligence and kind of automation will reduce a lot of the outsourcing roles, and also the outsourcing bodies are calling the industry calling it a sunset industry, because a lot of the big players that can outsource are already outsourcing. You know, whereas my argument is that actually the growth is and should be in the SME sector, where, or you know, there's only very few that are already engaged in it. What are your thoughts in terms of the upskilling of outsourcing, the impact of artificial intelligence, and the general direction that it's heading in the next 10 years?
I have absolutely no idea. No idea. Because if you'd said to me 5 years ago, what would I be doing now? Or 10 years ago, what would I be doing now? I could never have imagined that. I could never have imagined when I was at university studying that I would be in the outsourcing industry, sending work to different countries and helping my clients find more time. Time wasn't a scarce resource back in the late 1980s, because I'm an old guy. So I have no idea what's going to happen in the years to come, but I do know this. Increasingly, it's becoming more and more expensive to find the right people in Australia. It just is. Everything gets more expensive and people don't want to work. So for the foreseeable future, I see outsourcing as having certainly the amount of work that's going to be outsourced from Australia, I think is just going to grow. And I think current or existing businesses, they have to consider whether or not they want to outsource. I think new startup businesses, growth businesses, businesses that are going to start in 2 or 3 or 4 years' time, they're not going to have to decide if they're going to outsource or not. It's a fait accompli. They're going to be outsourcing. It's just a matter of where they outsource it to and what work they get other people to do for them.
And the process of outsourcing, how they engage with it. It's fascinating, that, isn't it? You know, I'm trying to, I obviously advise SMEs, and I'm trying to encourage even startups and people not even yet in business to consider outsourcing, because it's not let's wait until I've got five people and then begin outsourcing. It's figure out how to outsource and build your company, build the foundations from that base, because it adds rocket fuel right from the start.
Well, that's right. And it does come down to having processes and being consistent in what it is you want to do. And the good businesses are the businesses that automate. You know, if you can automate things, and automate doesn't necessarily mean robots and doesn't necessarily mean not having people. But if you can automate and drive processes within your business that every time someone contacts you, this is what happens, this is what you do, 3 days later, this is what you do. Sure, you can use automation software to do it for you. Someone's got to drive that automation software.
Yeah.
So, outsourcing in the Philippines, where if someone wants to see it as a sunset industry, they certainly can. I'm not sure. I think maybe they're just looking at the opportunity within the large corporates that are already there. You know, Telstra's not going to grow massively.
I agree. There's so it's sunset within the big end of the market, because it's it's already saturated. But the SME space is only growing. And also, I think there's a lot of innate protection from automation in the SME market, because by their nature, SMEs are very quickly evolving. They're pivoting a lot. They're kind of frenetic little companies, and it requires a lot of generalized skills and applications. So you just inherently don't get as much. You don't get as much processes, and you don't get as much standardization of tasks, which can be replaced by automation. So I think there's a lot of protection there within the SME market, and certainly. You know, I think it can be the big conglomerates that test out AI and automation for the next kind of 10, 15 years. They can refine it, and then SMEs will be able to pick up on that, as a kind of secondary market and really benefit from that. But certainly because of the kind of frenetic activity of SMEs, it's likely not to be adopted quite so early.
Time will tell, Derek. We'll have to wait and see.
It's exciting, though, isn't it? It's certainly an exciting industry.
It's exciting. It's a very interesting industry to be a part of, and it's very interesting to watch what's going on within the industry. And we're also a part of that, both you and I. So we'll all also drive where it goes in the future as well.
Absolutely, and I mean it's great to have you on the podcast, because I think that it is, it's a rising tide. And I think we can all benefit. So there's no sort of sense of competition. I think we all just need to cooperate to encourage as many business owners into this thing called outsourcing. Yeah.
Yeah, quite right. Quite right. And not every outsourcing provider is suited to every business. So while I might not be able to help one person, there's always someone else that can.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, it's because these things, and I try and tell people, an outsourcing partnership really is a partnership, isn't it? More so than a lot of other kind of contractual providers, because they're really sitting side by side with your staffing and your human resource. So it's really a much bigger partnership than many others you would get in business.
Well, it is. You're essentially a business's HR department, and that's a lot of that. That is how we see ourselves when it comes to our virtual staff that are working for our clients. So we do have to work closely together, and we do have to know if there's anything critical going on in the business, or at least the staff have to know. And they have to be educated, and it's a challenge, and we every day we try and do better.
Absolutely. No, it's a very, very valuable service you offer. Thank you so much, Neville. It's been a huge insight. And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Oh, look, phone call's always the best. I like chatting. So if anyone wants to pick up the phone and give me a call, my number is 0402 116606. But my website is virtualstaff365.com.au, or they can just pop me an email, which is neville@virtualstaff365.com.au.
Fantastic. And that's an Australian number, obviously, and we will put all of the contact details in the show notes. Thank you so much, Neville, and we look forward to chatting again.
Great. Thanks, Derek. Thanks, listeners. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, that was Neville Samuels. I hope you enjoyed that. He is from Virtual Staff 365. If you want to get in touch with Neville or want to know anything about this episode, then go to our website at outsourceaccelerator.com/125. And as always, if you want to get in touch with us or ask us anything, then just drop us an email to ask@outsourceaccelerator.com. See you next time.